The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, team, this is so exciting. We have the Top Gun Maverick license, and every element of this is set up for this to be a home run. Joseph Kosinski, the director, is going to be involved. Tom Cruise has never done a voice in a video game. He is going to voice Maverick in this game. And also, we've licensed the engine from Namco for Ace Combat. So we're going to have a flying engine ready to go. This game's going to be an absolute fucking home run blockbuster. Let's just figure out how we can make it as good as the license deserves.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important to honor the legacy of this franchise. And, you know, you really need to feel like you're Maverick when you're in the cockpit. So we have to just get 100%. Every detail of that 100% correct. I've already scouted the aircraft, and I've taken sample photos and things like that, so we can go and just really, really just honor these machines.
Oh, great. Jay, if you want to put those in the Dropbox, we can put them up on the big screen. Take a look.
Speaking of Dropbox, I've been doing some rendering work on the side. To make sure that Maverick is authentic to the movie and the world that we love. And so, you know, the bar scene where Maverick goes into the bar and she's like, you gotta have shots for everybody. You know, that bar.
Yes.
Right. With Jennifer Connelly's character.
Yeah. Jennifer Connelly. So I have been working on that bar space because I think it should be like a hub world. Mm-hmm. Specifically the bathroom. I took it upon myself. I put in about 2,000 man hours into rendering this bathroom. Cause I think we want to know where Maverick goes to the bathroom and what kind of, what's in that bathroom? What is the bathroom of a Top Gun bar like? So I've got some slides here.
Real quick, can I just interject? And this is an open question because I don't personally know. But we don't see the bathroom in the movie, right?
Right. That's why I went to the bar in I company expensed a flight economy class, and I went to the bar where they shot it. And
oh wow, I like that initiative.
Thank you.
Hey.
And I took some poops and I in the bar.
Okay.
And I took photos of those so that we could get like the rendering and the lighting right. I've mocked up. I'm using the Lumina engine in only the bathroom, which I personally licensed from Square Enix, so that
you took photos of your own shit in a toilet in a bar.
No, in Maverick.
That's what you're saying,
Maverick. So I ate what I thought Maverick ate over the course of a week, and then would continue to go back to that bathroom and poop in those toilets and take a photo. I wore a flight jacket while I was doing it. And I think here, up on the screen, you'll see some of the...
Please don't take that. Please take that off the screen.
...of that bar.
Can we just kill the monitor, please?
And I
kill
just
the big screen?
There's a few shots here, like this one. And then, So anyway, the bathroom is done.
Let's just take like 15, everyone. Let's just take like a
15
break.
15 what?
We'll just sort of 15 minutes. Let's just go take 15 minutes
what?
And just sort of stretch our legs.
Okay.
And reconvene and maybe just we'll clear headed. We'll have a better vision of what this game is going to be. Because I don't think we're getting anywhere here at this point. Not to single anyone out, but
is it all right if I release what I've designed as a mobile standalone called Maverick's Bathroom?
No, you will certainly be sued if you do that. Cannot do that. Cannot release a Top Gun game called Maverick's Bathroom.
I'll get it off the store then, because again, I took the initiative.
Jesus Christ.
It says here it's the top-selling game in the App Store.
Oh, fuck. Shows what I know. We web swing through skyscrapers and man the controls of X-Wings as we discuss the highs and lows of licensed games this week on Get Played.
Welcome to Get Played, your one-stop show for good games, bad games, and every game in between. It's time to get played. I'm your host, Heather Ann Campbell, along with my fellow host, Nick Weiger.
That's me, Nick Weiger. And hey, I'm here with our third host, Matt Apodaca.
Ooh, what is up? Hello, everyone. And
what on earth?
Hello,
DJ
everyone.
DJ Cali.
You're in this professional studio, and it turned you into Don Imus.
Yeah, that's right. We're going live to the callers. Dump that bitch or whatever he says.
Great to be back with everybody.
Immediately
great
exhausted.
To be back with you. Yeah, I know. Pace yourself. You got a lot of pod to do. As I take a sip of coffee, we're going to start things off by reminding everyone that this month's We Play, You Play is GoldenEye, which is coming Monday, February 27th, one of the best licensed games of all time, which ties in with the topic, which we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, we're going to talk through GoldenEye, if you played it back in the day, or if you're playing the new re-releases that are available, I believe, on Switch and Game Pass, but Xbox only. I don't think it's on PC Game Pass.
I think that's right. I think. So
there must have been some licensing hoops that they had to jump through, because what strange platforms?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to have to do something with Rare's contract with Microsoft. I'm sure that's got to be part of it. And then I would guess when something's not on PC, they're maybe worried about, you know, mods or something, or it, you know, I could see, I don't know how easy it is to mod it, something that's on Game Pass. I mean, imagine it's as simple as modding something that's on Steam, but I don't know.
God forbid somebody make it better or make it nude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Well, we're talking licensed games today, so let's hold off on that GoldenEye conversation, because then we won't have anything to talk about at the end of the month.
Yeah, we're fucking shooting our wad this episode or two episodes away from the main event. So let's pace ourselves. You're right, Heather. Let's talk a little bit about this Nintendo Direct that just happened as of this record.
I haven't watched it. I don't know what they said, except that Breath of the Wild 2 is going to cost $70.
Yes, Breath of the Wild, the sequel, Tears of the Kingdom, will be out on May 12th, 2023, will cost $70, which is a lot for a game that's coming out on effectively last-gen hardware.
But
talk about more like Tears of my freaking wallet. Good grief.
I know that that seems like a lot of money, but in the 90s, Chrono Trigger cost $69.
No, it's like, yes.
It's there's Earthbound, I think, cost $69. I think Donkey Kong Country cost $69. This is a price point which used to be, because of inflation, effectively a lot more expensive. I'm kind of shocked that it's taken so long.
That is absolutely true, Heather. However, what we're dealing with nowadays is digital distribution or the cost of pressing something to a disc, which is like minuscule in comparison to cart manufacturing. Cart manufacturing was so much more expensive. But yes, I do remember that because I remember my dad complaining about it. My very thrifty but very loving father who would treat his kids on the holidays, and he got me Zelda 2: The Adventures of Link for Christmas, but still was like that was this game cost $70. Like it's absurd, and that's $70 in like 1988 money, which is, I should do a little inflation calculator,
$275 in today's money. Actually, I bet it's pretty close. How much is it?
I'm looking
do
it up right now.
Do an inflation counter. Calculator right here live.
$190.
I wasn't that far off.
You're not that far off. So imagine paying $190 for a video game. That's what people were doing. That's what largely parents were doing in those days. I was gonna say it's still a lot of money considering we've kind of settled around this, you know, $59, $49 price point for Switch games. But, you know, whatever. I'll fucking... My feeling about Nintendo, and this is throughout this presentation, the Nintendo Direct, and also about what I'm going to talk about and what are you playing. Take it easy. What? We're not there yet.
I heard my cue.
You jumped the gun. Pay attention to context. Don't just hear the words.
I'm on my phone.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, what is your connection? This is like you're so spotty. Your video is like you're on a Game Boy camera.
I'm getting in shape.
Oh, you're at the gym.
What I'm in the gym. What?
Like, what does it? You're getting in shape.
I'm getting in shape. You lose your job. You got two paths. The road forks, and you choose either you hit the gym, you lawyer up, or you let yourself fall apart. I tried that first path last year. Now I'm doing the other way. Why don't you continue talking about whatever it is that you were talking about? I'll come back.
I was just going to say Resident Evil Merchant, who introduces our regular segment for people who are listening for the first time. You should get some workout clothes, because I don't think the trench coat loaded with supplies and ammunition is particularly conducive to doing hit cardio.
It's a sauna suit. You know that?
Okay.
I'm sweating through it. Unfortunately, I don't have a change of clothes.
That's, you know what? Get your own house in order first. Before you get the gym membership, maybe buy some more clothes.
You want to see this body in shorts? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying I want to see your body in anything. I'm just sort of talking about your own personal well-being.
I know that on Jersey Shore, they stress gym tan laundry. But I think for you, you're going to have to change some of those letters around and work on one of those other ones first. Laundry first, perhaps.
If I wash my clothes before I wear them to the gym, don't they get ruined?
No, you should wash them afterwards. You are washing them afterwards, right?
I guess get more laundry.
I hit the showers right after in full clothes.
You might get your membership revoked if you keep doing that. We'll check in with you again in a bit, Resident Evil Merchant. But I was just thinking, did Resident Evil 4 come out like the same year as Jersey Shore? Were those like contemporary? I bet Jersey Shore was a few years afterward, but like it's a while that that's the same general time frame. Anyway, the Nintendo Direct happened. This will be old news as of this episode's release, but just to speed through it real quick. Big announcements, Pikmin 4. Pikmin 4 had some nice looking art direction. I haven't played a Pikmin since Pikmin 1 on the GameCube. And I'll just sort of say, like, it's this is one where I was watching. I was like, oh, this looks pretty good. I guess this is probably like an alpha, you know, just looking at the graphical quality. Not again, not criticizing the art direction, but just talking about just like the, you know, just how the graphics look compared to other games that are coming out this year. And it's like, no, this game's coming out in like 3 months. I was like, oh, so this is almost done. It's just the Switch is really showing its age.
Yeah. I noticed that a lot throughout a lot of the presentation. I was sort of 100%. Like, this all kind of looks bad, kind of.
It looks like a console that came, an underpowered console that released in 2017, which is what it is, 6 years ago.
But I want to say that I believe this week the Switch has now outsold the Game Boy, which, you know, the Game Boy is a 20-year-old, 30, Jesus, 40-year-old system. I don't fucking know. And
yeah, it was
so pervasive that Game Boys were everywhere. It was everybody had a Game Boy.
Yes.
And that's also the system that launched Pokemon, which is such a titanic achievement that it's launched. I mean, like, it's the best-selling IP in the world. So if you can imagine that that was the system that launched Pokemon and that the Switch has outsold that system, that's a big, I mean, like, I think Nintendo said something this week about we're in uncharted console territory now because they aren't price dropping.
Yeah.
They just keep selling the Switch.
Yeah.
You don't seem very,
No, I'm just saying.
It's 122 million sales, which also means it outsold the PS4. Like, that's
the Wii U by a large margin.
No, well, the Wii U is.
I've bought more trash bags than they sold copies of the fucking Wii U.
No, I get everything you're saying, Heather. It's who am I to second guess them? It's a fucking enormous success. It's just a little frustrating as somebody who would have liked a hardware update by this point in the console's lifespan. But whatever. They keep selling because you can play it on fucking go on.
The third best selling system of all time is the Nintendo Switch, only behind the Nintendo DS and the PlayStation 2.
Yeah. And so despite like all everything Fuck. That all the quibbles we have with it, you know, with Nintendo's idiosyncratic tendencies, it doesn't fucking matter because they have these huge IPs and they were smart enough to have this be like, okay, this will have both the functionality of a tablet with a controller attached and a, you know, home console that you can hook up to a TV. And that hybrid design was just so forward thinking. Anyway, so the other things I talked about, the Bayonetta prequel, I think like looks kind of cool. I don't really play, you know, not really into that franchise or haven't really played those games, but I just say like it has a design where the player character themselves cannot attack. They have a familiar they're accompanying who does all the attacking. And so what you're doing mechanically is just, you know, immobilizing enemies or, you know, having enemies like drawing aggro, having enemies target you and, using every non-combat resource to be able to let your NPC companion actually take out bad guys. That just seems kind of cool. I know Heather would hate that.
I'm gonna get the amiibo.
Cool looking amiibo.
I'm gonna get it.
Mm-hmm. Dead Cells Castlevania DLC looked cool. I mean, like probably the best Castlevania game that'll come out in a while. Looks pretty fucking cool. I'm a huge Advance Wars fan back in the day, so I'm glad they finally have a date for Reboot Camp.
Yeah, and the war in Ukraine will be over on this
date. Yeah. I understand why they delayed it at the time they delayed it, but at a certain point, I think, come on.
And then, anyway, but then Fire Emblem came out, which is also a tactics game. So right. I don't think they wanted two on the market.
Oh, they didn't want to step on it. Yeah. That makes sense.
Wait. Hold on. I'm looking at the list of the shit that was just announced yesterday, which I should have done before the podcast. I should have done it. But you're really burying the fucking lead here.
I'm getting to it. I'm working my way through the list.
There are two pretty big announcements, one of which really appeals to me and one of which is like a bombshell.
There's a Professor Layton. I'm not sure if that's what you're thinking of.
No, that's not what I'm thinking of.
You don't like Professor Layton, the puzzle game series?
Ugh.
I did. I've never played one,
fuck,
and I don't have any context for the professor. But when I saw him in his little hat,
yeah,
I did say out loud, he's back.
This would, yeah. Professor Layton would very much be Matt's shit and not Heather's at all. Here's the one. Here's maybe what you're thinking of is the Metroid Prime remaster.
Holy
shit. The surprise. Matt is pumping his fist. The surprise release. Yeah, it's just, and they just did a stealth drop. They're just, it's out. Metroid Prime remaster. You can download it today. I still don't even know who developed it. I don't know if it was a retro internal thing or if they got a remastering, one of those remastering studios. I still don't have context for that, but yeah, it's amazing.
I did not play Prime back in the day. Didn't play it. Never really a huge Metroid person, right?
Yeah.
But I am so excited for people who love this because the people who love this really fucking love it. And when I hear like a drop like this, I know that there are people out there who are like, yes, yes. Although I also know that a lot of those same people have probably already done like upscale re-res, you know, texture pack Steam Deck versions of this game, which have been out for a chunky bit of time.
Yeah. I was trying to install it on my Steam Deck and was just like, well, I'll just buy this.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
When are we getting to the thing I'm excited about?
I don't know, but I was just going to finish my thought on this real quick. I spotted a Metroid Prime trilogy, you know, Wii boxed, used box version at a used game store in like Carson a few months ago. And I think it had a price on it that was like $60. I was like, holy shit. I took it up front. I was like, this is like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, you're selling this? And the guy like scanned it. He's like, oh no, sorry. This is 250. It's mislabeled. Because it's one of those ones that had a limited, for some reason. And this is, again, speaks to Nintendo's idiosyncrasy. What is the term for that? Idiosyncrasies?
Yeah.
Idiosyncrasies.
Speaks to Nintendo's idiosyncrasies that they're just like, a game like they have this, they put together this trilogy collection of this beloved series, and then they do a limited printing of it, and then it's just not available. For this is the thing that it's yet Heather, yes, they've made this available on their hardware again to people who are fans of this franchise is great. Anyway, I don't know if this is what you're gonna actually. I might not have listed what you're excited about because my next thing is Tears of the Kingdom. So no. what was your thing, Heather?
Game Boy and Game Boy Advance
on Nintendo Switch Online. Yeah,
I'm just thinking about whether or not Final Fantasy Tactics Advance will be finally released for Nintendo Switch. And I can start all over again one more time. trying to beat this fucking game. I want to express that it's a good game. It's great.
Yeah.
I got to do it.
Yeah. Starting a good game, never finishing it, wouldn't be me.
Yeah, couldn't be me. Simply couldn't.
Let's get to what are you playing?
Yeah. Okay, so are you still on the phone,
what,
Resident
are
Evil
you,
Merchant? Or
are you in the midst of a set? What's going on here? Are you taking a class?
And touch. Breathe in.
Are you teaching a class? What is happening?
And release. All right, bring your hands up on top of your heads. Stretch out that spine. Breathe in.
I'm sorry, are you teaching a yoga class? What happened? What happened in the past 10 minutes?
All right, thank you all for coming. Shavasana. Have a good day. Remember to breathe and find your focus, find your center. This has been Resident Evil Merchant Yoga Glass. Ooh, sorry, guys. Caught me in the middle of a little program I'm running here.
I mean, I'm impressed you've climbed the ranks so quickly from member of the gym to apparently trainer slash teacher in a matter of minutes.
So full disclosure, I was taking the class.
Okay.
And the sort of coach of the class, I don't know what you call that, looked concerned and left the room. In a hurry to get somebody. And I was like, well, when you see an open door, you walk through it.
Got it. Mm. Oh, so you just kind of took the reins and decided to teach the class.
Okay. You got a towel off. You probably want me to say the thing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why you're on the payroll, you know.
Breathe in.
You want us to do this?
Ask yourself, what are you playing?
Wow. There it is.
And release.
I like this new tranquil energy from the Resident Evil merchant. Matt, what are you playing?
Okay. So because I'm really enjoying The Last of Us TV show and we just replayed part one, I haven't gone back to play part one again, but I did pick up where I left off in my new game plus of part two.
Wow.
From after when we finished part one, when we covered it on the show. It's still just so good.
It is so good.
It's so fucking good.
Gorgeous game.
Great. We talked about this when we covered it on the show. It's just such a prime example of polish. It's so good. It's like everything works. It looks great. It plays great. I'm loving it. It's a fantastic experience. I'm in the Abbey section right now, and I forgot that Abbey is goals.
Yeah, Abby very much is goals.
She's so fucking shredded. I love it.
To have that physique.
It's incredible. I just love it. So I'm playing that. I want to pick Jack and Daxter back up. I took a week off from that. But then I also, from the announcement last night of the Metroid Prime remaster, I was like, I better get back into Metroid Fusion. So I was playing that on my analog pocket last night and got to a boss that made me mad, and then I turned it off. It's like, you fucking kidding me with this guy? He's hard.
Which boss is it?
It's like the first one. And he's like, I'm having a rough go.
Describe it. I'm sorry.
He's sort of like a snake dragon, kind of.
Okay,
and he kind of zips around at you, and then you shoot him in his glowing head, and then his whole body glows, and he just gets you. He's fucking tough, this guy.
You got this. You'll figure it out. You playing this on the Nintendo Switch Online Game Boy Advance? Or are you playing this on?
I'm playing it on the Pocket, on the analog.
On the Pocket. Okay.
It's not on the Game Boy Advance yet, I don't think.
Fucking Nintendo. This is what they do. Like, why not throw out the entire fucking library? No, they got to like just morsel it out over time.
Yes, and at a certain point, I assume it will be there. I think they showed it among the future titles coming, but Metroid is like a new thing to me, and I'm very into it. I love it.
I know we're complaining about the way they release these games, but they have a chokehold for like 50 fucking years. Nintendo has just been like, we know what we're doing. Fuck
yes, here. I know. It's maddening. To finish my thought from earlier, my feeling about Nintendo is like that Trump tweet about Coca-Cola, where he's basically like, it's okay, I'll keep drinking their garbage. Like, that's how I feel. What am I going to do? Yeah, I'm going to stop playing Nintendo games? No, I'll be frustrated with them.
Nick's
I'll
be playing pissed a lot off of Trump's tweets lately.
I'm glad he's back.
Did you see him, like, praising Joe Biden after
Very
the State
strange.
Of the Union?
Yeah.
Baffling.
I think it got like, bonked.
Anytime that dude says something, it's shocking.
Yeah.
He somehow manages to constantly turn the dial in a new direction.
Just when you think he's going to zig, he zags.
Yeah. Hate him. Horrible man. Horrible.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Heather, how about you? What are you playing?
What am I playing?
That's, I mean, I guess I, why would, I don't know why the Resident Evil would say, what am I playing?
That was weird.
Really weird. What, who knows with this fucking guy?
Yeah. He's fucking, this guy's crazy.
Yes, I, what are you playing, Heather? What are you playing?
Yeah, you're not, there we go. You're not over playing games at my house, you fucking weirdo.
Maybe he is, and you don't know it.
Maybe he is. We've been having plumbing problems. Maybe that's why. What am I playing? It's been a short week for games for me. I've been playing this this little game called Fortnite, and. Yeah.
I got legitimately tricked.
Look, I don't have a lot of time to play video games that aren't for the show. And so, like, if I have a half hour, I'm playing fucking Fortnite. Lots of new quests. The guy from The Witcher is in Fortnite, which made me wonder, is Fortnite a licensed game? What is it?
We'll talk about it, but that was one I was thinking of. Because it certainly has a lot of licensed properties.
Yeah, I did a bunch of like quests for Geralt. Is that his name?
The hard G.
Geralt?
Yeah. Geralt.
That sounds like an improv name. That's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Professor Gubb. Yeah, it's 100%.
So I did all those quests and got that skin, but really just equipped all of his heat because his weapons are an equipable thing on other characters. So my Sarah Connor is now like got 50 swords and I'm like, that feels right. Bunch of swords and guns. That's Sarah Connor.
That's cool.
This new update really borked her. There's two skins available for her. One that's not I'm going to kill Miles Dyson and one that is I'm going to go kill Miles Dyson. And I always choose I'm going to go kill Miles Dyson because I think that's her at her most threatening.
Mm-hmm. God, I just hate when somebody gets borked.
But something in the update fucked up the architecture on her face.
Oh, no.
So now her lips are like lower than her chin. And when she emotes, they droop like a loose boob onto her chest. And I can't play as that. Like that, nobody's gonna be threatened or take that seriously.
Right.
She's got like a camel face. And I also can't believe that there have been multiple updates where they haven't fixed it. If you're a Fortnite dev and you're listening to this show, hi. But also give me money. But also fix Sarah Connor. So I've been playing with her other skin. Not as threatening. No black baseball cap, black sunglasses. Like a woman who's going to murder a father. I can't believe it's a skin in Fortnite.
It's great.
Sarah Connor at her darkest. But yeah, playing with listeners. I announced, I think last week on the show that if you were a listener, just go ahead and let's play. And I've got a ton of friends that I have to accept. I'm scared to accept them because I also don't know if they're just like angry Rick and Morty people, which sometimes I'll accept and party up with. And then they'll be like, hey, do you write for Rick and Morty? And I'm like, delete, delete.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
But
call
yeah,
those Rick and Morty people.
loving fans.
Yeah.
There's really
they just
a line,
love sauce.
Isn't there? There's a wonderful, you go all the way to a, I suppose it's that way with any property. Like if I wrote on Star Wars, people would be like, really great up until a line. And then beyond that line, it would be terrifying.
From what I understand about Star Wars, they keep their mouth shut about things they don't like, I think.
Yeah, they don't really chill fan base.
Yeah.
Same with Last of Us. Man, can you imagine working on a game that is so good that it becomes a prestige HBO series and still having to put up with like constant hate?
Well, Last of Us Part Two, I think it did completely divided the fan base. That was before the adaptation even.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I've been playing Fortnite, partying up with, I don't know her real name, Beegs, your listener. Thank you so much. I think we took down a boss.
Wow.
Ed. We've got a couple crowns. And then my regular squad of people who I don't know in real life, but we all apparently work in the industry. Great game. Great fun. Lots of Kamehameha. And that's been my week in games. Nick, what are you playing?
Real quick, while we're shouting out listeners, I told this to you, Matt, but I met a listener, Carlos, who said that he helped you out of fighting Moog the Omen in Elden Ring.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That. Great dude. So thank you for your help. That was a very dark time. and I loved receiving help from listeners and from Heather in Elden Ring. Nick, you'll get to Moog someday.
Yeah, it's on the list. Carlos Rule, lovely man.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, so okay. Again, I'm talking Nintendo because I'm mad at myself. But I was at Costco and I impulse bought an OLED Switch.
Wow. We didn't even know this.
I'm so proud of you.
I have it right here.
It is so gorgeous.
I hate it.
We were talking so much shit about the Switch earlier, dude.
I hate how gorgeous it is. I hate how sleek it is. Well, you know what it was? Is like I watched that Nintendo Direct, and then I had to go to Costco, and I was there, and they had all the Switches. Like, they're not going to give a fucking hardware update till they're not even going to announce a hardware update till next year at earliest. And my Switch Lite is a little long in the tooth. And fuck it, I'll just fucking get this thing. It's not just that it's that the hardware itself is like so sleek. It's just also the screen is gorgeous and it's larger, like significantly larger. Oh. It's got more heft to it, but like in a good way. Yeah. Like it's not like heavy. It just feels more substantial for handheld playing. And that brings me to the games I've been messing around with. I downloaded the Metroid Prime Remaster, which I got super fast. Because the fucking dock has a wired Ethernet port. And this is, again, just like what Nintendo fucking does. They make you excited for something that's been standard for 10 years. Everyone fucking has it. When they added Bluetooth, it's like, oh my God, there's Bluetooth on the Switch. Yeah, fucking everything has Bluetooth. Like, you should have had Bluetooth out of the box. Why did this have to be an update? Why did we need two hardware revisions before we have a fucking Ethernet port? That said, it's great. I love it. I was able to plug this thing in, download it really quick, and played a bit of it. So the thing about Metroid Prime is that it had God, I'm going to say idiosyncratic again. Whatever. When it was on the GameCube, its control scheme was quirky and unique. It worked, but it was basically like, I think Nintendo at the time was not sold on, or maybe this came from Retro. You know, they cut like twin stick controls for first person games. So the way the control worked is that your movement was all with the left stick, if memory serves, and then you would hold a lock button to look around. So like one of the shoulder buttons would let you look around with that same stick, and then you could lock onto a target. And then when you locked onto a target, you could strafe around it, kind of like third person combat, you know, when you, in a game when you lock onto an enemy and then you can kind of circle strafe around them.
Mm-hmm.
So that feels very clunky with how, you know, console first person games control these days. And even at the time, it was a little clunky, but it worked. So they had just have like new control schemes now, and you can just control it like a twin stick shooter. You can control it like a, you know, like you just walk or move with your left stick and look around with your right stick. And it works pretty well. I would imagine it might even skew the balance a little bit because now you can move and aim freely. And that probably makes sections of the games a little bit easier. But it does look really, really nice. I was like, man, they really did not phone this in. It feels like a true modern remaster.
Wow.
I also messed around with the Sea of Stars demo. This is one of the games that was announced in the Nintendo Direct. This is like a throwback JRPG that I was surprised by. I hadn't heard it was in development. Isometric. It's got this great pixel art and animation. Your movement on the world map is really fluid. You just run around. You can climb and jump and swim and like that. It just feels a lot more platformy. Without minus any sort of challenge than a typical, you know, map movement in a JRPG. And then the combat has like an active element where it's kind of like, you know, I think it was Final Fantasy VIII, where you could have a timed button press for the gun blade to add some extra, you know, it's optional, but you can add some extra impact to your attack. And they're kind of different for each character in terms of like holds and timed presses. And that's fun. And that just makes the turn-based combat a little bit more. It gives a little bit more energy to it. It's also got a good sense of fun and silliness. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It feels like it's kind of like making fun of games of that generation. Yeah. It's very self-aware. Here's the thing that I was very excited about, and the reason I downloaded this demo, they fucking got me. It has guest music from Yasunori Mitsuda, the composer of Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross. And let me play a little bit of this track. There's a track from him, from Mitsuda-san, Coral Cascades, that's in the demo. All right, so you're sitting in it. You're like, I know where this is going.
That's nice.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay. Similar sort of vibes, but we're settled in here. Oh, wait a second.
Wow.
This is good.
Great.
I was interested in that
game. Yeah, it's good as hell. You get the sense of it. Music's great. I was just going to say, we need to standardize fishing controls in games. Because this one is wild. It's like you aim... You have control of where your rod is with the analog stick. Like you press one button to cast, right? Mm-hmm. We're all used to that system. You press another button for where you when you want the fucking hook to land. And so you have like that's a different element. And then you have control of the analog stick to reel something in. But it's not just like positioning a gauge. It's like positioning where your line is in the play space. And it's just, I don't know, it's like you can adapt to it, but it's just like a like divergent from how fishing works in many other games that I played. And I don't know, that just feels like a thing. Let's just figure it out. Just have a summit and say, like, this is how fishing works in video games, and we're done.
I don't do it. I just don't do it.
I get it. I didn't do any fishing in Persona because I was like, I don't want to spend any of my precious social time at the fucking fishing pond.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be with Lady On or Futaba or whoever.
Bro out with fucking Ryuji and his No More Rules t-shirt. Anyway, the OLED Switch is dazzling, and it pisses me off because I don't like spending money on this shit. All right, anyway, let's talk about today's topic, licensed games. Obviously, Hogwarts Legacy just got released. So we're not going to be talking about that, but it does kind of put licensed games on the brain. And also, you know, we're talking about the GoldenEye re-release, which we're going to be talking about that at the end of the month. But we thought we'd just sort of like go through some of our favorite licensed games, because this is a sector of gaming that has vastly improved over the time I've had this as a hobby. Like, it used to be just like these were like licensed games were universally garbage, and there'd be like one outlier. You'd be like, oh, wow, this one's actually pretty good, even though it's a licensed game. And now it's kind of gotten to the point where they're like, OK, you know what? These IP are so valuable that we should really put some resources behind the development of these games and, you know, try to make sure they aren't just cash-ins. Those cash-ins still exist, but you know, by and large, there's a lot more care and craft put into these licensed games. I kind of want to start the discussion here, which is like, what do you think, and this is an open question, makes a good licensed game? Like, why are some of them good? Why are some of them better than others?
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a clear answer.
The fucking game is good. Like, you can slap... Like, you can slap a license on a, you know, if I'm not going to play Pixar's Cars the game, but if it was a fucking awesome racing game, I might play it. You know?
I would play that. Yeah.
So I think it just is like the license is secondary to the quality of the game itself. But then if the game takes the source material and really dips into it, and combines that with good gameplay, then it's a great licensed game.
Yeah, the same things that make any game good.
Yeah.
You're saying. That's at its core.
Yeah, I feel like you were asking, what is a good game?
Well, no, but I mean, I think there are specific parameters to a licensed game, because it also, you know, you want to honor that world. You want to make if it's a fantasy of being a particular character, like Batman or Spider-Man, mm-hmm. You know, you want to make it feel like, oh, this is fun to be this character. And if it's an alternate reality, you want to make it feel like you're inhabiting that reality. So, yeah. You know, you want to like what people already know about the licenses baked in, about the IP is baked in. So you want to make sure you like, yeah, ideally want to honor that. Because what you're saying, like, yeah, like Home Improvement Power Tool Pursuit, which we talked about on the podcast, doesn't play terribly as a Super Nintendo action platformer. It's like, it's like, okay, but it just has absolutely not like fuck all to do with Home Improvement.
Right.
It's just kind of a baffling gameplay experience. Matt, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Because there are a couple different kinds of licensed games, right? Like there's like your Batman Arkham series, like that's obviously the Batman license, but it's not necessarily an adaptation of a particular Batman story. It's an adaptation of the Batman oeuvre, I guess, right?
Yes.
But there is like a type of video game that I feel like no longer exists anymore, which is like a movie adaptation video game, which is just like they take the movie and then they adapt it into a game. It's the movie on rails, basically, where you play, where you play the through the story of the game, and maybe there are added elements to the video game. And I always like when they add stuff, because it's like you're at least something's a surprise a little bit. A good game. I'll just throw this one out here to start. The Spider-Man 2 video game,
mm-hmm.
The Spider-Man 2 movie video game, I should say, for PlayStation.
And this
2,
is for PlayStation 1. Right? Or was it PS2?
This was PS2.
Okay.
There is a Spider-Man 2 video game, but it's a different thing. But the...
Oh, I see the one you're talking about.
Yeah, Spider-Man 2 movie adaptation game is really, really good. Like, way better than it had to be. Because it adapts the movie, which I think we can all agree fucking rips. It's really maybe one of the best superhero movies ever. It's great. So it adapts the story. All the voice actors from all the actors from the game or from the movie are in the game. And there's added elements like you'll run into other characters that aren't in the movie, because it would be weird if there was an entire Spider-Man game and he only fought one guy, you know, Dr. Octopus or I think that's the only guy in the movie. Yeah. But it's just so great. And then on top of this, they made it an open world, like it's an open New York game. It's the first Spider-Man game to do this. You can crawl on buildings. You can swing throughout the city. They improved upon this in the new Spider-Man games for Insomniac Spider-Man game. But like this was the first game to do it. And when you played this game, you were like, I'm fucking Spider-Man. It's unreal. It's unreal how good of a job they did with that. And then, you know, it has like little side missions and stuff. And like, you know, you got to deliver the pizza. You can't do too many flips as Spider-Man or else the pizza gets ruined.
Right.
That's like a good mechanic. That's great. But that's like that's one that I really, really loved when I was young, because I just replayed it so often. And it was just a really well made, like they cared too much about how good the game was. And it was like it fucking worked. It was great.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, you know, a lot of it, too, is just like getting the leeway, you know, from the license holder, getting the, you know, getting enough resources from the publisher, and also, you know, getting information, because that's the other thing. And I can speak to this a little bit because, you know, much of my game development career was working on bad license games. And I worked on a couple of games that were comic book franchises that were basically, hey, this is the game adaptation of the movie.
Right.
Fantastic Four and Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer. I worked on both of those games. And in both of those situations, it was like, you know, everyone is trying the best they could to try to make this happen. But I can speak to the original Fantastic Four games development was the studio got the license for the comic IP. And that was before Marvel comic book IPs were this huge thing. It's before they were all under one umbrella. It was, you know, mm-hmm. Sony had some of them. Other studios had other parts of it. This was before the MCU as we know it. And so, like, then I believe Fox got the rights to make a Fantastic Four movie. So the game that was already in development as like a Fantastic Four beat 'em up got sort of like retconned mid-development into being an adaptation of the movie, which was like a complete like, okay, we have this engine that's kind of built around, you know, making sort of a classic beat 'em up that now they want to make into a third person adventure action platformer, which was, you know, the engine was fine, but was not really equipped to do that. So that was part of it. And then it was also just like the timeline was rushed and there weren't enough resources to execute, you know, what the licensor and what Activision wanted. So this sounds like making, you know, excuses for what ultimately came out, but it's just the reality of it. I feel like for a long time they were just with these games was basically like, hey, this has to be out for this movie's release date, or this has to be out for the holidays, because all of our sales are going to come from, you know, people who are excited for the movie and then buy the game, or you know, parents buying this game for their kids who like the movie.
Yes.
And very little attention was paid to just like how much time does this game need to be good?
There was I just remembered this. I didn't have this like written down, but I remember the Star Wars Episode III Revenge of the Sith game.
Yeah.
Came out before the movie. Like, I think with a significant lead, like with a couple of weeks of the movie being released. So if you played through the entire game, you know how the movie ends. So like some people were spoiled from the movie, which like you can sort of infer what the end of the movie is going to be if you're following the story of these characters that you already know.
Yeah.
Right. But if you've, I guess, only seen the prequels and you're like, I'm going to play this video game, the whole thing was spoiled for you, which now they would never do. But it's. Yeah.
Spoiler culture is a relatively recent thing.
Yes.
I had the soundtrack for The Phantom Menace before the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a friend saying, like, hey, don't read the track listing. This was on CD. I was like, okay. And then when I read the track listing later, because I had another friend who read it and it was like, he was bummed out. One of the tracks is called Qui-Gon's Noble End. So they spoiled on the soundtrack, like on the back of the CD.
Yeah.
They spoiled the ending of the movie. And it was, you know, it was just a time when not as much attention was paid to that.
Yeah.
I you know, the Episode 3 game, I have never played it, but I do think, doesn't that one have a weird fucking thing where at the end you can either be Anakin or Obi-Wan?
Yes.
And you can have like a bad ending if you win with Anakin.
Yeah, you can get a bad ending, and then it is like, instead of obviously getting burned up in the lava of Mustafar, you're just like Anakin, and then you're just like with the fucking the Emperor And he's like, good job, Anakin.
So that completely changes the canon of the trilogy that follows.
Yeah, it's so funny.
There's no Darth Vader in that reality.
No. But this,
well, there is Darth Vader, but there's no Darth Vader as we know it.
There is also a good... There's a mode that's not part of the main game. It's just like in the menu. It's a versus mode, and it's a lightsaber. It's a lightsaber fighting game, and it's like you can just pick any character from the franchise, basically, and you know, one versus one, you know, them in a lightsaber duel, and it's fucking awesome. The game is good. I remember liking the game quite a bit. But I wanted to share. I was praising the voice actors from the actors from Spider-Man are in the game. And I guess I do need to share Tobey Maguire's performance in this game because I feel like it's at a time where voice acting in games wasn't quite there yet. Like, it was still, like, it was not new, but it was, like, you know, early. People were still just sort of figuring out what you can do with video games. Here's a sample of some characters speaking.
Parker, the delivery deadline is coming and you are only just now arriving? Get these pizzas to the customers right now.
No problem. You can count on me.
That looks like a good place to make my first delivery.
Just like Reddit once.
I know somebody who worked on a big licensed game. Actually, one of the development lead on a game I worked on had worked on another big licensed game. And there was a huge movie star who they were like, hey, we got the voice of this, we got the star of the movie to do voices in this game. They'd booked him for 1 4-hour session. He showed up 2.5 hours late. So they had him for 90 minutes to try to get through the entire game script. And they just had to, like, on the fly pick what they absolutely needed. And as such, they had to just, like, cobble together retroactively from the lines that they got from him a way to make the story make sense. And, you know, you end up making those sort of compromises when you're beholden to, like, some fucking ego-driven, you know, maniac who is the face of this IP. I'll tell you guys who it is off pod.
Oh, I can't wait. That's my favorite kind of gossip. Gossip that's just for us. Heather, do you have a favorite?
Favorite.
Just anything, I guess. No, favorite.
Licensed game, and you can't say Fortnite.
Yeah, licensed game.
Oh, no.
No, you can say Fortnite.
So I've actually got a few picks here, right? And I kind of want to rattle off a couple.
Please.
One of them is Alien 3 for the Super NES, which was not based on the movie. In the movie, it was sort of like, imagine like a dreamscape that combined a bunch of different alien movies into one video game. So it has music elements from Aliens, like converted into Super NES tracks. And then it also has guns, which were not in Alien 3. So it's a little bit like if you kind of didn't remember what happened in Alien 3, this would be a perfect licensed game of the film. But it also has Bald Ripley. And I think the score is pretty good for a Super NES game. So I've got a couple tracks here to share. The first is just your intro track. Like, it's not quite Alien 3's music.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is based off of Aliens.
It's cool.
And then the next track is just straight up from Aliens. This is the song playing when Ripley is driving the tank and, like, saving people. You get the idea. It's a good action sound for a Super NES. So that's one of the ones that I thought was a good licensed game. I think the best licensed game of all time, in my opinion, might be Star Wars Squadrons, which is the, especially in VR, if it wasn't for the fact that playing a game in VR is such a fucking barrier to entry, I think people would be raving about Squadrons still. And I've got a clip to show you because I don't know if we've ever like actually watched. I've played it a bunch, but I don't know if you guys have actually watched how fucking good it is.
Now, fire all boost thrusters.
Like it's, you're inside of Star Wars.
Yeah, we're in a cockpit here going through a battle with a bunch of Star Destroyers.
Wow.
I get it. What is it? I don't know what this rock formation is here, and this is a giant Death Star-like structure.
I think it's just asteroids. It's like a mining colony. But like your cockpit has a physical presence in your space that is hard to see in clips.
Right.
But you feel like you're in a fucking cockpit, and then the depth of space extends way, 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 way out in front of you. It's so fucking good. And you switch back and forth between TIE fighters and X-Wings. It's stunning.
This would make me throw up.
Yeah, this is really gorgeous. It is a little nausea inducing, but you know what? I kind of have Star Wars listed as a category because there are clearly some bad Star Wars games, you know, that weird Kinect Star Wars game, Yoda stories, right? We covered that on the podcast. There's some bad ones, but I think by and large, I think because so there's like there's a
find my sock, you must.
Because there's flying and there's fighting, and also because George Lucas himself put a lot of resources behind LucasArts, originally Lucasfilm Games, and like prioritize game development. There's a lot of good Star Wars games out there, including of that era, PC games of that era, X-Wing and TIE Fighter and X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, which are kind of the precursor. Those games are fucking rad. And they are kind of the precursor to Squadrons, which we're seeing now.
I also want to give a shout out to another, not Star Wars game, another licensed game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is how we're supposed to be doing this, but it's how I'm doing it.
This is great.
So on the Xbox 360, there was a licensed Naruto game developed by Ubisoft called Naruto Rise of a Ninja. And I think it was the first Naruto like licensed game outside of Japan. It had a full English track for voices and a full Japanese track for voices. So you could play it in like with whichever, like whether you're subs or dubs, you could play it that way. It also had the music from Naruto, which sometimes you'll get the license to the show, but you won't get the license to the music. Oftentimes in Star Wars, you'll be playing Star Wars games that don't have John Williams scores. And you're like, this kind of doesn't feel like Star Wars because of it. I've got a clip that I sent in, and it's showing its age because it's Xbox 360. But one of the things that was incredible about this game is that the entire village that Naruto started in was in the game a la Grand Theft Auto. So you could run around from rooftop to rooftop. You could do all of his like fucking little powers and shit. And you could figure out where locations were based on your memory of the anime. So you could like start in his house and be like, I think the ramen shop is over there. And you could hop from rooftop to rooftop like he does. And it was accurate to both the manga and the anime. Here's a clip. It's just
got a great run there.
Yeah. Great run cycle. Like he can run up buildings. He can hop from rooftop to rooftop. He's got like an enormous jump because he's a ninja. And you also build up relationships with all the NPCs because in the anime, Naruto starts as like a piece of shit. Like he's a real, he's not a very good guy. So you're running around with all of these NPCs and they all have like frowny faces over their heads because they hate you. But as you take on missions and do quests, the town starts being nice to you.
The art style here, he's, you know, the characters are cel shaded and vibrant, and then the world itself is a little bit more of a, you know, it's a little bit more of a grounded look to it, but it all sits in nicely.
Yeah,
this looks great.
It was really good. I covered it back when I was a game journalist and went up to Canada to do a story. And I, like, when I they showed me the game, I was like, oh my God, what?
Wow.
This is so fucking good. And when I went to find clips on YouTube, it's like Naruto Rise of a Ninja. Most of the top YouTube clips were like, how can Naruto Rise of a Ninja be so good? And it's like people covering it and being like, everyone slept on this game and it's amazing.
Wow.
And then finally, Ninja Turtles Arcade.
Oh,
Ninja Turtles Arcade is a good one. And also on my list, related to that, is another Konami beat 'em up of that era, X-Men the Arcade Game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. X-Men.
Which had 8 players. And it's just also like that one is, you feel like the X-Men in the beat 'em up context.
Yeah.
Again, that's what Fantastic Four was going to be. You'd think it could be fun, but, you know.
That would be great. I love the Fantastic Four as characters. I think they're owed their time in the sun, I think. I think they deserve their time to shine.
They won the platformer with hacking minigames, so what are you going to do? Anyway, so that brings me to some of my picks.
Yeah.
And I had that one that I wanted to shout out, X-Men the Arcade Game, real quick. Also, I'll shout out a couple of NES games that I think were really good licensed ones. One of them got remastered. One of them has kind of been forgotten, but DuckTales.
Yes.
The Capcom game was fucking great. It didn't... In a sense, it didn't really honor the property. It was kind of like, why are you Scrooge going around doing golf swings to hit rocks and, you know, pogo sticking around on your cane? But it is just like a really satisfying platformer. And, you know, it just has a great feel to it. The art is really good. The art for the NES, it looks like all the DuckTales characters. And then Goonies 2 is the other one of that era. That's I think it was a Konami game. Could have been Capcom. I think that was Konami that did Goonies 2. But that's a weird one where it's like, this game is the sequel to the movie The Goonies, but it's like a Metroidvania where you go around and you play as I think Mikey is the character's name, the lead Goonie. You play as Mikey.
Yeah.
And you have a yo-yo, and then you get more weapons as you go, and your quest is to... release a mermaid. I forget exactly what the story is, but that game was very playable and very fun. The game that I think is probably like my favorite licensed game. There's a lot of good candidates here, but I think I picked the Telltale Walking Dead games.
Oh yes.
I think they're just they're so well realized as storytelling. I think they're better than the TV show. They're really like the apex of the Telltale formula, where it feels like your decisions matter. And because so often they're like life or death, so often they're like, hey, this kid is gonna die, or his mom is gonna die. Yeah, exactly. Like, who are you, who's gonna? But sometimes it'll be like, oftentimes it's like two characters, you like both of them.
Mm-hmm.
They are both your friends, and one of them is going to be left to be killed in the convenience store by a horde of zombies, and the other one is going to survive and be forever traumatized. So I think just like the art's really good, the music's great, the voice acting is outstanding, and they're really well written, well put together games. Real quick, while I'm talking about this, I'll talk about the Sopranos Road to Respect, which is a game that I have an additional design credit on.
What do you hear? What do you say?
Yeah, this game, I barely worked on this game. I worked on this game for just a couple months, and then I asked to be taken off of the project. But the way that one began is the idea was for it to be like kind of like a Sopranos Telltale style game. Like, that was the pitch. And if you think of it from that standpoint, it's like, okay, yeah, when you just hear Sopranos video games, like, what the fuck are you doing? But you're like, wait, like a narrative driven, dialogue driven game with a few action sequences that has the cast of the Sopranos and, hopefully writing that can at least semi live up to the stellar writing of the best TV show ever made. It makes a little bit more sense, and it starts to you know, like, kind of like, okay, that sounds like a game that could work. Then the publisher THQ, rest in power, decides they want Grand Theft Auto Sopranos. And again, this game is using the same engine as the Fantastic Four game.
Mm-hmm.
So not built to accomplish that. Can't really do open world shit at all. So it ends up being kind of like a levely based design. That's, you know, kind of just like a lot of like fighting sequences and then a handful of these, you know, QTA dialogue driven, you know, sequences. There's a little bit of some dialogue stuff that's left in that was, you know, widely justly ridiculed because it was basically your interaction committed. It was limited to choosing tough or smooth in terms of your responses. But it's like the thing of just like, you know, I think this I'm sure this happens with a lot of licensed games that fail. It's like it starts off and it kind of makes sense on paper. And then for a variety of reasons, whether, you know, some within your control, a lot of them outside of your control, it ends up just turning into a big fat pile of shit.
Grand Theft Auto Sopranos is like a fundamental misunderstanding of what The Sopranos is, too. Because I don't think of that show as like Goodfellas or something, right? Like that's like, yeah. or even like Scarface. It is more about talking. They talk more on that show than they do like action stuff.
It should have been a dating sim, but instead of dating, it's relationships.
Yeah,
yeah. Again, I think this. I think you are both correct. And that was where the original design document, the original pitch, which I was not involved with, but that was where that was headed. That's why it was sort of like there was some optimism, like, oh, this could kind of turn into something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously not great creative division from the publisher, partly because they're just like, hey, we spent this much money on this license and we want this game to sell, baby. And if it's going to sell, it's got to have, you know, punching and shooting.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are you going to fucking do? Anyway, it was a different era in licensed games, and I feel like you could probably make something like that these days. There are a lot more. It does feel like, you know, what a licensed game could be has expanded quite a bit. I want to shout out a couple more from that era.
Sure.
or shortly after that era. Batman Arkham Asylum, obviously the Arkham games, but I do feel like Arkham Asylum, it just that contained version of it was just so. Well, everyone fucking knows this, but Rocksteady's Batman was like a revelation in terms of licensed games. Like, oh, wow, you really feel like Batman, both in terms of how he fights and then the detective aspect. They kind of like nail both of those. And it's got a pretty good story, good voice acting. And another game of that era is The Incredible Hulk Ultimate Destruction.
Yes.
Which was the Hulk game where you can run around. It's open world. You could run up buildings, which is just like one of the coolest things that's ever been in a game. Yeah, you just feel like the fucking Hulk. You can bust shit up.
That's the like pinnacle of what the experience should be, right? Like you should be able to. I'm Spider-Man. I'm Batman. I'm the Hulk. This is awesome. Those are all so good. Those are great selections. So I feel like there's a license we haven't. I mean, there's so many licenses we haven't talked about. But like The Simpsons is like a pretty good video game license. Like they have a lot of bad.
Yeah.
They have a lot of bad Simpsons games, but there are some really, really great ones. Like The Simpsons arcade game is really fantastic. The Simpsons Road Rage, which is Simpsons
Hit and Run. There was Hit and Run and Road Rage. I think Hit and Run was the
Grand Theft Auto clone. Yeah.
And the Road Rage was the Crazy Taxi clone, but they were both pretty good.
Those are both great.
I think, unless I got them backwards.
No, you're right. You're correct. Both of those games I really, really loved. But there's one game that I feel like I've talked about a little bit that nobody talks about because it's like not... I don't think anybody was like excited for this game, but then it came out. And I think it is... Like I think it was like well received, but I don't think it was like a huge like game. Peter Jackson's King Kong, the video game.
Oh yeah,
adaptation.
I didn't play this, but I remember it.
So I have two clips I'd like to share, and they're both very different. Here's just a little sample of what the general gameplay is.
Okay, Matt is showing us a YouTube video, and
we're right here.
It's a very cinematic.
Oh, this is
People are scared.
It's a first-person survival adventure game.
Now they're fighting a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah. You're shooting at a dinosaur.
Retreat on Skull Island.
It's first person. It's maybe the first first person game I've ever played. It's Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Also, sometimes I'll look at PS2 games and I'll be like, God damn.
Yeah.
Still looks pretty good. Art direction goes a long fucking way, man.
And this game...
Was this PS2?
This game was on... Yeah. I played it on PS2, but it was developed for like Xbox 360 and I think PS3 even at the time. But I got the PS2 version because I had PS2. Maybe not PS3. That can't be correct. But that's one element of the game. Ammunition is scarce. You can get yourself into some real trouble in the...
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing the main... The Adrian Brody character from this game. I don't remember what his name is. But then there's another type of gameplay in this game where you get to be Kong and it's fucking awesome.
That's cool.
I just used the second clip. So he put the lady down and now you're just punching a fucking dinosaur as Kong. It rules. There's the lady.
Kong is just bodying a T-Rex.
That's fucking badass.
It's so much fun. It just becomes a brawler, a third-person brawler, where then you're King Kong, and you're fighting dinosaurs, and you know, and that's just on Skull Island. You know, there's more to the story. He gets off Skull Island. He does not like it. But that game was such a surprise to me. I remember getting it for Christmas from my aunt, and I thought at the time, why'd she get me this? This is such a like aunt gift. You know what I mean? You're sort of like, here's a video game.
Oh yeah. No, that's so much of the just to interject real quick, that's so much of the market for licensed games is like, hey, here's a parent or a relative. By like, oh, he likes King Kong. Oh, he likes Star Wars. Let's get him this game.
Yeah. And I liked the movie. I don't know if I was like, I don't know if it's like something I wouldn't stop talking about. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sort of like, oh, Matt loves King Kong. I don't know if anybody would say that. But that game is so good. It's great. I wish there was a way to play it on modern hardware. I guess I can get it running on my Steam Deck probably. But it was really, really fantastic. And just such an odd success. An odd, like, a game you would expect to be bad, but they did a really good job with it.
Those are my favorites.
Yeah.
The one of the legendary ones in that category, and I have not played this game, but they made two X versus Sever first-person shooters for the Game Boy Advance.
Wow. What?
And the X versus Sever, you know, that movie is like the Lucy Liu. Who's
Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Banderas, and it's like famously like this is one of the worst movies ever made. But apparently the games are like pretty impressive.
Wow.
I heard the Riddick games are good too. And like Vin Diesel,
Chronicles Riddick: Escape from Butcher Bay is on my list. Yeah. I think that one also is like Vin Diesel is a gamer and kind of, you know, I like when a star uses their powers for good.
Yes,
and that seems like sort of like he kind of threw his figuratively muscle, though he is muscly, literally as well. Mm-hmm. He threw his figurative muscle behind, like making sure this game had. This game had the resources it needed to succeed, and that's a really good Xbox or Xbox 360 era. I think it's original Xbox era first person shooter. Really, really fun, really cool. Honors the license. Another one I have on my list is a point and click adventure game. This one comes from LucasArts, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis.
Oh,
and this game is a point and click adventure. It's very much of its era, but you know, it plays like a Monkey Island or a Day of the Tentacle, Maniac Mansion. It plays like one of those, except you are Indiana Jones, and it really feels like an Indiana Jones adventure. Like you start in the real world, you traverse when you go to different cities. We have the map with the red lines drawn on it, charting his course. You know, you go from the U.S. to Europe. you're on a fucking U-boat in disguise as a Nazi officer, and then you end up in Atlantis, and you're like, that's like the third act is like you're actually there. So it very much follows like kind of the, hey, it's the Nathan Drake arc they borrowed when they did the Uncharted games, of like starting in reality against human combatants and ending up in some sort of fantastical scenario by the end, as Indiana Jones movies work. And that one's just, it's really well done. It's got like they have a Harrison Ford sound alike voicing Indy.
Just some grump.
Some grumpy guy, but he does a really good job. I forget what the voice actor's name is. And it feels like an Indiana Jones movie that you're playing. That was always one where it's just like when they're making like fucking Dial of Destiny or whatever. Or what was the other one? What was the one that came before this?
I don't know.
Crystal Skull, King of the Crystal Skull. I'm always just like, they should just adapt Fate of Atlantis. It's such a cool story.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll say though, it does have some action stuff that doesn't play great because you're controlling with mouse and keyboard. It has some like little brawling things. You can largely skip. You can choose how you want to play the game, and you can choose not to brawl less, to use more of your wits. But there is a puzzle I remember in particular, which is when you're on the U-boat, one way you can get past a Nazi guard is by making a sandwich. And the guard is like, that sandwich looks good. I think I'll go make one. And then he leaves. And it makes sense as an adventure game puzzle, but thinking of that in an Indiana Jones movie of like Harrison Ford.
Bum, ba-dum, bum. I get it. Put the tomato.
But like that's like in like D&D parlance, Indiana Jones has like high dex, high charisma.
Yeah.
If I saw Harrison Ford making a fucking sandwich, I'd be like, God damn, I gotta get me one of those. He just has
a good looking sandwich. Yeah, 100%. No, he knows what he's doing. That makes me, I wasn't even thinking about this, but you mentioned Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
I don't know if you think of that quite as a license, but if you do, I mean,
there's some probably.
There have been some really good AD&D games. And not just like the RPGs, not just the Baldur's Gates of the world, but also like the Dungeons and Dragons Capcom beat 'em ups.
Oh, interesting.
Were pretty fucking fun. Let's see if we can remember what the name of any of those were. Any other licensed games I'm forgetting? Any other ones you guys want to shout out? I mean, Marvel versus Capcom, obviously.
The PlayStation Spider-Man games I remember really being great. There's a lot from the PS2 era, because I feel like early PS2 era, I was just at the right age where, like, if there was a video game based off of a movie, I was, like, the right age for it. Like, I remember...
Mm-hmm.
I remember liking the Shrek 2 game. I don't know if it's actually good, but I remember being, because that was sort of like a beat 'em up where you could change characters like mid fight too. Like there's like four characters on screen at any given time, and you can just like press one of the direction buttons, and you're one of the characters. I remember that being good. Yeah, I don't know. There's so many that were people are gonna be like, why didn't you say this or why didn't you say that? And it's like, you know what? You could have said it.
There are a ton of great licensed games. And mm-hmm. I was shocked because when this topic was pitched, I was like, I'm more of a purist. Mm-hmm. And then when I really started thinking about games, I was like, man, there's a lot of fucking good licensed games. Tons.
Yeah. I mean, the current Spider-Man games are really fantastic.
Miles Morales is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to the new Jedi, whatever the fuck it's called.
Fallen Order?
Yeah.
Fallen Order 2?
Yeah, that's going to be great.
I'm excited. I hope they make it even harder.
I hope they at least went back out to the drawing board on the map, at least just a little bit. I'd love a new map.
I hope there's a sequence where it's like, bum, ba-da-dum, ba-da-dum, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba-bum, bum, making a sandwich, making a sandwich.
Oh, the Marvel Ultimate Alliance games were really great, too. I liked those games quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
I liked the most recent entry on the Switch. It's Switch exclusive. That is a really good one. By that similar token, the X-Men Legends games are also really great. You mentioned one, and there's 40 X-Men games or whatever, And I guess it's worth mentioning that there is a current one out, the the Hogwarts Legacy game.
Yeah, we touched on that earlier.
I'll tell you what the fucking legacy is.
Yeah, fucking doo-doo.
It's a, you know, I feel, I think we talked about this in our text thread a little bit. I feel so much empathy for those developers.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I like, I just, I not on a property that large, but I've certainly been in the situation where it's just like everyone on the project kind of knows like, ah, fuck, this sucks. This is annoying. We're kind of just, we got to try to make the best of it because this is our job. And it's either do this or resign and try to find another job. You know, it's just got to have felt like a real slog to work on that thing.
It also is, I think there's a sort of hopelessness, you know,
yeah.
without drawing too many parallels. When behavior becomes visible to parent companies,
mm-hmm.
and there are ways to exorcise the bad actors, and the studio or network or whatever takes those steps, it really helps the people involved with the product who have felt trapped by like being blindsided by something, right? And I feel like the problem with Hogwarts Legacy is that you can't remove J.K. Rowling from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like whatever contracts she's negotiating, it's like, not only is she like the octopus at the top of the media empire with her tendrils and everything, but there's no way, nobody's ever going to be able to wrench Potter away from her.
No. And it's one of these things too, where she keeps doing it because people keep telling her it's bad. So it is just like, It's fucking awful what she does and what she says and what she gives her money to. And so I understand people. This is what we were talking about the other day, like trying to apply nuance to this is impossible because there are people who are going to play it no matter what. And there are people who are going to play it and, you know, do think badly of her. And so, but like, then there are people who are not playing it who are correct also. But then there are also people who are not playing it and then bullying people who are playing it. And it's like, okay, well, like, what the fuck do we do? What the fuck is the right thing to do?
I think that it's heartbreaking. Like, the reason that it is a difficult thing is that this world meant so much to a full generation of people when they were kids. It reinvigorated reading across the planet.
Yeah.
It is. And
I waited in line for a book.
Yeah, it's not some niche
fucking nerd
series. It's in the top 20 best-selling books of all time. All of the Potter books are in that fucking list, which is nuts. It's and, like, when you consider that some of these books have been around for like 300 years or some shit. Like it was so pervasive, and to like find out that this space that you belong to, this like environment that has so much nostalgia for you is toxic and hurting people. Like, that's, it's like a breakup with somebody that you started a good relationship with and then realized that they were bad. And it's like, I loved the person that you were, but boy, oh boy, I can't love the person that you are. And that's a heartbreak.
And here's the thing too, is that there are people that are just like her, probably, who keep their fucking mouth shut and don't say anything and still get to, you know, keep their bag and keep their legacy intact because they've realized that shutting the fuck up is free. And you can do that whenever the fuck you want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the real lesson.
She like, her takes are so fucking bad. And even extending like the empathy of like, okay, something happened to you, lady, and you are taking it out on a group of people who had nothing to do with that thing. Like,
yeah,
even that, you're like, no, man, like it's so horrible. It's so fucking horrible. And it's so sad. And like, yeah, do I wish that I could like go to, what is it, Hogsmeade? And like rummage around?
I don't know the franchise at all.
Good for you, Nick. That makes me proud of you.
Well, look, that's not any sort of ethical standard.
No, you're a hero.
I am a hero.
You're a fucking hero.
We had the whole Harry Potter collection in paperback, and I remember when whenever JK went on her she'd been kind of dancing around it, like kind of like favoriting some tweets, and then at a certain point she just went full like transphobe. And the day that happened, I remember I watched my wife Natalie walk over to our bookshelf, pick up the entire collection with two hands, and then carry it over and dump it directly in the trash. And I said, we can at least give that to the library or something. And she said, I don't want anyone reading that shit.
That's kind of like what I did with my Yeezys. I was like,
yeah,
well, bye, guys.
Yeah.
Fucking threw that shit in the garbage. Ugh.
I will say that, like, look, I'm kind of ethically neutral on playing it. I understand the arguments against it. I understand the arguments against giving money for this thing. I think this is one where, if you can find a way to pirate it, it's a shame that the games have become so tough to pirate. But if you find a way to pirate it, this is a good one to pirate. But like, whatever, this franchise is meaningful to you and you want to play the game. I'm personally, that just speaking for myself, I'm ethically neutral on that. I think the reason there are such vigorous calls for like boycott and, you know, don't play it and say that you're not playing it and make a stance of I will never play it is because we just are all so powerless.
Yeah.
In this system of global capitalism where, you know, those who are at the top are just, they're just cloistered in a way where you cannot touch them. They just like they can do whatever they want with no consequence. And all you can hope to do is try to retreat. What you're talking about is the best-selling books of all time, Heather. This list does make me laugh. This is just from Wikipedia, but number one, Don Quixote.
Who the fuck number has two, read that?
A Tale of Two Cities. I read Don Quixote.
Yeah, me too. I am Don Quixote, the man of La Mancha, making a sandwich for you.
Don Quixote published in 1605 and 1615 originally. Number two, A Tale of Two Cities. Number three, The Little Prince, a great book. And number four, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
That's so fucking funny. All these old ass books.
Hey, can I do as a palate cleanser? Can I show you guys some of this Dungeons and Dragons game? This was Shadow over Mystara, and they released this one a compilation a few years back. So you can play it on
love Dungeons and Dragons. Hardware. Let's see it.
But this is one of those ones where just like aesthetically, I fucking, this is so my shit. This is one of those
I can't wait to see it.
Late period arcade
like
platformers. Well, yeah, there's some.
Oh, I remember this game.
Ooh.
This game fucking ruled.
This is
a
player.
This game was so fucking good.
You dare rise against us? Come at us, warriors. Yeah, this is like a arcade hardware, you know, like the height of 2D art and animation, beat 'em up. And we've got like a thief character fighting a war machine with a bunch of goblins. But yeah, every element of this is just so fantastic.
I remember this. It was so, like, also, it's one of those games when you saw it at the arcade, you were like, fuck, that looks incredible. It looks like a cartoon.
It looks so much better than, yes, it looks so much better than what you had at home and home hardware.
Yeah.
Those dedicated, I don't know what board that was on. What would that have been? Like the OPS3? What the fuck was the Capcom board at the time? Anyway, I was going to say that, really cool game. Hey, let's do a segment. How about that?
Ooh.
I got another edition of Pixel Chart, our video game chart segment. And this one is related to licensed games. By the way, I'm realizing we didn't talk about Lord of the Rings games at all, but that's another franchise. So many of those Lord of the Rings games are so fucking good.
There's good.
Plenty of good licensed games out there. This is the top rated Star Wars games on Metacritic. This is the top five.
Okay.
This is not including mobile games or pinball. Angry Birds Star Wars, shockingly well reviewed. Maybe it's good. I haven't played it.
It is good.
But Yeah, these are the, well, maybe you would have gotten it. This is the top rated Star Wars games on home consoles.
Also, quick shout out to the Mad Max video game. It's also fucking great. I'm going to say, wait, did you say not including Lego?
No, I didn't say that. I said not including mobile or...
I'm going to say Lego Star Wars.
Not including mobile or pinball. I'll give it to you. It's. Do you want to get more specific?
I'm going to say it's going to be the one that is not the most recent one, but the collection. It's like whatever it's called, the Skywalker Saga or whatever it is. That's a new
it's
one.
It's not that one, but I'll close enough. It's Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, okay. Number 5 on the list. Yes. This is the one that came out in 2006, sitting at 86 on Metacritic. By the way, the system is, I called it the OPS3. I was off. It's the CPS2. It was the arcade board that Capcom was using in that era, all those good-looking 2D games. I got two. I should not have gotten into Bing to try to figure that out. I apologize. I should have been focused on the podcast. Okay, you got one of five. Four more on the board. These are a little tricky, but I think you guys can get it.
Star Wars Episode I Racer.
Nope, it's not on this list. There's no N64 games on this list.
That's also a Dreamcast game.
There's no Dreamcast games on this list. This list is. I will say that there are three PC games and there is one GameCube game.
Star Wars: Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Not two.
One,
but
one. War, one.
KOTOR 1 KOTOR is 1. Number one on this list with a 94 consensus. Also released for Xbox back in the day, and now you can play it on anything.
Star Wars: Rogue Squadron.
Rogue Squadron, yes. On GameCube. Rogue Leader was the proper title, but was part of the Rogue Squadron franchise. Yes, that one is number three on the list.
Star Wars Jedi 2.
I mean, here's the thing. I don't know if you just made that up.
No, I think that's what it's called.
You're not quite there, but you almost are. Do you want to get more specific there?
Star Wars Jedi Knight 2.
That's right. Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, which came out for PC in 2002. That's number four on the list. There's one left.
I bought Star Wars Jedi Knight 2 when they ported it to Switch, and I played it for like 5 minutes and was like, people say this is good, but I didn't see it. But maybe I didn't play it enough.
I don't know how the ports were. They were very much designed for play on PC, so it could have been a controller thing. And there's one more. I mean, you can figure it out. A franchise that was already mentioned, another PC game.
Huh. Franchise that was already mentioned.
Star Wars TIE Fighter.
Not TIE Fighter. You just said it.
Oh, Star Wars Battlefront 2.
No, it's not.
Who,
it's not Battlefront.
Who said
you just said. You just said it. You just said what the
Me?
Franchise was.
Me?
You said.
Who?
Star Wars no, Jedi Knight no. 1?
That's it. Yes. Star Wars Jedi Knight 1 is number two on the list. Star Wars Jedi Knight, I love this subtitle, Star Wars Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2, because it was the sequel to Star Wars Dark Forces.
Yeah.
And then they took the player character and were like, what if he's a Jedi Knight now? By the way, Dark Forces, I'm something of a defender of. That was basically just a reskinned Doom, but going around with a blaster shooting Gamorrean guards was pretty satisfying.
Star Wars Battlefront 2 ain't nothing to sneeze at, though. That's a fucking game right there.
Tell it to the consensus at Metacritic. I'm just going off of the numbers.
I'm not
here.
Mad at
yeah,
you.
So that list, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, Star Wars Jedi Knight, Dark Forces 2, Star Wars Rogue Leader, Rogue Squadron 2, Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, and Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy.
I don't know how you would give Squadrons less than 100. If you play it in VR, it is 100% the thing. Like, you can't, like, there's no place to level criticism. It's like, are you in the cockpit? Yes. Does it sound like the world? Yes. Do you fly a mission? Yes. Can you do multiplayer VR dogfights in squad? Yes. It's fucking perfect. It's insane. Should be number one on the list. How people, you got to play this game. You got to get a whole setup, a whole rig. Have either of you played it? Great. You're coming. You're going to come over and you're going to play it.
I've played it, but not in VR.
You have to play it in VR. It's fucking insane.
I'll do it. Have a bucket ready.
Okay, I'll do it. You know, talk me into it. The 79 on Metacritic for Star Wars Squadron.
What? What?
I don't know what to tell you. Metacritic seems to say that the real Star Wars VR experience is Star Wars Pinball VR, which is an 81 on Metacritic. So maybe we should check that out.
Unless you're the ball, I'm not interested.
That's this week's Get Played. Links to our social media are in the episode description. You can join us in our Discord and let us know licensed games that we forgot or licensed games that that you love in particular. Our engineering is by Jordan Duffy, Jordan K. Duffy on Instagram. And check out our premium show, Get Animated. Heather, this week we are talking about Junji Ito Maniac, correct?
Yes, we are. And not because of the Fortnite crossover. We actually recorded the episode before there was a Fortnite crossover. So don't think I'm shoving this content down our throats. This is a Nick Weiger. He's like, hey, I want to get creepy. And I was like, okay, all right, we'll get creepy. And he's like, good, I want to play Junji Ito. I want to watch it. And I was like, all right, Nick, go back under your blanket. I'm cold. That was the exact transcript of our.
Yeah. Yeah. I was chewing on rusty nails and hiding between walls. But yeah, Junji Ito Maniac is streaming on Netflix if you want to watch along, and you can listen to Get Animated at patreon.com/getplayed.
Also, we are covering the entire show in one episode of Get Animated. It's not going to be an ongoing series. And then after that, we're covering Blue Lock. So you can get on board with Blue Lock and watch some anime with us. I fucking love anime so much, and I love video games, and I like my co-hosts.
Wow. Look at us.
For once, Matt, we didn't get played.
No. It feels nice.
But you know who did? You.
Me? Got played. Fuck!